if you want travel to change you and you want to become better through traveling, it doesn't happen magically in the middle of the process. It happens before you leave your front door. The projects I work on nowadays, whether it's a film or a book or something like that, oftentimes it's about people experiencing nature in some way, but also dealing with really challenging subjects. I love being outside and I love being in the elements, in the snow and in the waves and whatnot, but I want to use those as a gateway to tell deeper, more meaningful stories.
Join explorers and travelers on their journeys and discover distant places and fascinating cultures. From the highest peaks and densest jungles into the heart of adventure, this is Unfolding Maps with Eric Lawrence.
Hello and welcome to this new episode of Unfolding Maps, where I talk to a person that combines many talents and many passions. I'm talking to an adventurer, a photographer, creative director, speaker, author, father and husband, surfer and certified yoga instructor, and first and foremost, a storyteller. I'm talking to Chris Burkhardt. Chris travels much of the year to explore the most remote places on Earth, capturing stories there to inspire people to rethink their relationship with nature. And in this way, he seeks to advocate for the preservation of wild places all over the world. Initially, however, he was one of the most sought-after surf photographers in the world. His assignments took him to tropical paradises from the Caribbean to the South Pacific. Later on, he specialized particularly in photographing cold places. Today, he is one of the most successful and popular adventure and outdoor photographers. He has 3.7 million followers on Instagram alone. In this episode, we talk about how his career unfolded, what draws him to cold and rather inhospitable places, how we can travel well, whatever that means, we'll get to that, and much more. Please enjoy our conversation. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Eric. It's a pleasure, and I'm excited to chat and connect today.
May I ask, where in the world are you right now? Where am I speaking to you?
I'm just found me right in my office, right at home in Pismo Beach, California. So I feel like it's lucky. Normally I'm kind of out on assignment on the road, and yeah. I actually just got back from Iceland maybe a day ago. So I've been traveling quite a bit lately, and you know, it's great to be back here. This is like, I feel like where I recharge my batteries, so to say, and find a lot of joy. And so I'm stoked to be back in my studio right now in Pismo Beach.
You look a little bit like you come back or just came back from Iceland. You wear a hat. I see you wear a pretty thick sweater. I'm just 3 or 4 hours south to you, I believe. I'm in LA. That's where I'm located.
Oh, nice.
It's been a chilly night, but somehow you look like you're in a different climate zone right now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like in Central California, especially north of Point Conception, the weather really changes. You know, we get so much coastal fog and it really sets into where it can, you know, you can have a day where it's 70 degrees in the middle of the day, but at night it'll plummet down to like 40 degrees or something like that. So I like the more harsh environments for sure. I feel like they've drawn me in a lot and created, I don't know, a lot of substance in my work as well.
Which hopefully we will be able to talk about in this very conversation. But I would
absolutely
like to start the conversation with a very specific point of time in your life.
Yeah.
Which is as a young man or as an even younger man. Back then you used to work in a magazine store, and I believe it was a job you didn't really love too much, but it gave you the opportunity to browse through many, many magazines naturally. Can you take us back to that point of time in your life? How old were you and what was it like to work in that store?
I was 19 years old, and you know, I grew up really close to where I am right now. Mm-hmm. Actually in Pismo Beach, California. This is kind of the place I've always lived. And I grew up going to the beach, going to the pier, which is right nearby my office. And so kind of, I think in some way, I convinced myself when I was going to like junior college, that although I didn't really feel like I had a path forward with photography, I didn't know where I would go. I was like, you know what? At least if I surround myself with magazines and photographs of all the places I wanted to go, all the places I wanted to see myself, then maybe I could get closer to being there. But So I took a job at a place called Esquire News, which was like a magazine store downtown Pismo Beach. From the front window, I could see the ocean. I could see the waves, and it was tempting me. You know, it was almost too tempting because I would just sit there and stare out the window all day. And what I realized was all that that experience did, besides give me a terrible paycheck, was it made me feel so incredibly insignificant that like all these photographs I looked at all day, like this is where I really wanted to be. This is what I wanted to be spending my time doing, and staring at them wasn't getting me any closer to being there. Although I was able to kind of study the work of, you know, journalists and photographers I loved, I quit after just a couple short weeks, and I realized like that no amount of staring at pictures of distant shores was going to take me there. So I needed to make a choice, and I actually quit that job. And that was the last job that I ever had. And I told myself, I'm going to give photography 5 years at that point. And I was like, if I'm face down in the dirt somewhere, fine. If I'm thriving, even better.
Yeah. So it was looking at all these magazines like National Geographic and so on. It was probably more like a nutrition for daydreaming, but you realized it didn't really do anything beyond that at some point.
And absolutely. You're spot on. Yeah.
And you didn't only quit that job. As far as I know, you also, took an even bigger leap forward. You also quit college and really put basically everything on the line to make this dream come true, or at least find out that it just doesn't work for you.
I think college was a more challenging decision because my parents had so much stress attached to the idea that like I was going to be the only person in our family to really to be able to go to college. I had like scholarships and I did really well scholastically, but I just sat there in class and I realized that what I was being taught was not what I wanted, needed to learn to grow. It was not going to support me, or it wasn't going to bring me closer to my dream of being an adventure photographer. So I guess I had to make a really tough decision, and it was, I've always related it to this analogy of like being at a train station and the train is just about to leave and you're still packing your bags. And the point is that when opportunity comes, you're often not ready. You're not ready to go. You have to like leave some things just kind of unpacked, unready, and you have to go. And that's sort of what I did. Like I didn't have a career plan, a path. I just knew that like, if I was going to make anything of myself, this was the time, because the more time I spent at that job, the more time I spent going to school, the more comfortable I was going to get. And the idea of taking what I would envision would be a more safe path was going to become more appealing.
I believe back then it was not only your dream to become a photographer or adventurer photographer in general, but you already had a pretty specific idea of becoming a professional surf photographer, right?
Honest, what I really was passionate about in the beginning was just landscape photography. Okay. And I love the idea of photographing the landscapes that I grew up exploring and looking at and seeing. But I knew very quickly, after just maybe a year of experiencing that and trying it, I knew very quickly that that was not going to be a realistic option for me, because what it required of, you know, the time and the equipment and a gallery or things like that, I didn't have at my disposal. So I think that, to be honest, surf photography or documenting surfing in general was actually, was kind of a fallback plan. It was kind of more of something that like, I knew how to shoot surfing. I understood surfing. I grew up doing it. And so, it was kind of like this thing where I was like, well, this can still get me to the places that I want to go. This can still get me to those beautiful locations, but it wasn't going to force me into a situation where I was going to regret it later and not have the, you know, the income, the time, all those things to really see this through. So,
but you also mentioned in your current book, it's called Wayward in the English edition and Shots of Adventure in the German edition. You write in it that back then there were probably about 30 professional surf photographers in the world who were able to make a living from this profession. So the odds, even if you say it was kind of a safe fallback option, the odds weren't really in your favor either with that one.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, nothing was ever in my favor, I don't think. I mean, especially just growing up in a low income home and not having traveled, I think that the idea of getting on a plane and going anywhere seemed like a stark contrast from what I was used to. But I guess in some way, I don't know if my aspirations were to necessarily be a professional surf photographer. It was just the idea that I could shoot this or I could do this and it would be something that could give me a head start. It could get me connected to the right people. It could kind of like give me a leg up in some way. Like if my hope and my goal was to just begin to travel and see the world and document the world, then this was maybe a way to do it. Because there was a lot of people who were still shooting images of surfing, but that wasn't their full blown career path. But it did become my full blown career path. I was on retainer and, for about 8 years, that was pretty much all I focused on shooting.
So it worked out, but it definitely wasn't easy all the time, right? I remember reading that you also...
Not at all.
For example, spent some time living in your car, which probably also didn't do a lot to convince your parents that your path is a really good alternative to college.
Absolutely. I would say that, for me, there were some sacrifices that I had to make. And I think that just not having, again, a solid job or a source of income, it just required me to, in some ways, kind of dedicate myself to the craft even more. I would oftentimes find myself waking up at a beach somewhere in the back of my truck, not having eaten or eating, some like 35-cent gas station hot dog or something like that. And in some way, although that sounds kind of harsh and not very fun, I also like really revel in those times. I love what those times taught me and the experience they gave me.
Under which circumstances would you recommend such a strong and almost non-compromising way to follow your passion to younger persons thinking about how they could turn their passion into a profession? Is it that you say, well, do it no matter what? Is it always the right answer to say yes to these inner dreams?
I think that the best way to put it is that if you, the truth of the matter is that you can convince yourself to do anything. You can convince yourself to go spend hundreds of thousands of dollars going to school and then never using that degree. You can convince yourself to do anything. I think what you need to do is people need to spend time thinking, spend time inwardly recollecting your own thoughts and trying to figure out what makes you stay up at night? What raises the hair on your arms? What inspires you? Right. And what is it at the end of the day, when you go to bed, you hit your pillow that you think about, that you dream about? And if you can pursue that, and if that's remotely an option for you to pursue, then I would say you owe yourself. You owe yourself the chance to do it. You owe yourself the chance to try. I mean, I didn't tell myself, I'm going to do this no matter what. I said, I'm going to give it 5 years. I was 20. I was 19 years old. I had all the time in the world. Like, what's 5 years when you're 20? And that's exactly what I did. So I gave it 5 years and obviously it's turned into 20 and it's been successful. But I knew full well that at that point, I could always go back to school. I had other options, I think that, again, things get more challenging when you don't heed that call in your youth, or you squander your time partying and just doing stupid shit. I mean, that's the hard thing, is like people tend to, I think, prioritize time in another way. And I, at that time in my life, all I really cared about was seeing the world and having a career and making something of myself. And I think that that's where I got a leg up. I didn't spend time partying in college. I spent time living in my car, eating burritos.
And really working on your craft as well, of course. You didn't wait for big jobs to come around to pay your bills, but you really just went to the beach and started photographing and becoming better and better this way as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was meager in the beginning. I would go to like a local surf shop or a skate shop and I'd open the door and be like, hey, can I shoot your photos of your store for like a couple $100? I would shoot senior pictures and weddings and portraits and I would run up on the pier at the beach and take pictures of random surfers in the water and then try to sell them images, right?
Ah, you were one of these guys. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was literally in the beginning, it was like, I would have done anything, anything just to make money. And I think that attitude has benefited me. That hustle has benefited me a lot, obviously, because I don't think that there was a ton of, like, nobody was going to give me a handout and give me an opportunity. And, I had to prove myself to myself and to others that I was like going to be hungry enough to create the work that I wanted to put out in the world. And that's really where I learned the value of like creating the portfolios that you want to share. Nobody was going to just give you the opportunity to shoot those.
And also, I'm sure it turned out to be helpful. In fact, that was one of your ideas, to position yourself specifically as an expert for something, not just as a general landscape photographer, but really focus
right.
on water, on the ocean, on surf photography, and really focus on that niche as well.
I think what I realized was that when I would look at the magazines, and I'm pretty big into like studying a subject. When I become obsessed with something, I want to learn everything about it. I want to dedicate my time and energy and my mind to it. So I became a student of magazines. I became a student of kind of like these people that inspired me, the writers, the journalists, the photographers. And so I realized that all of these people were very niche. They had a focus in their career, and in their work, right? And I was kind of like, well, what's my focus? What is somebody going to hire me for? Why would I go to the magazine saying, well, I'm going to do just what this person does, right? So I started to realize that if I could find a hole that I could fill, like a void, and I could fill that void, I was going to become valuable. And that's exactly what I tried to do. I became kind of the person who was traveling to more distant, more remote, more tricky places to go to. And I was dedicating more time in harsher environments. And the hope was that this would pay off in terms of kind of what the magazine needed and what they felt like they weren't getting. So that's kind of where it came. Yeah.
Yeah. Harsher environments is a good comment or good phrase in that sense, because, well, while it was your big dream to become a surf photographer and you actually did make it work, you mentioned you had a retainer for 8 years in magazines and so on, you also at some point started to realize that this dream job actually was not exactly that. It wasn't exactly your dream job, at least not anymore, and at least not in the way you were pursuing this dream job at this moment in time back
right.
then.
Right. Well, and I think what was happening was, in order to explain that, I kind of need to back up a second, because obviously right when I started working for the magazines, I would have done anything. Mm. I would have done sure. anything they asked me to, if they wanted me to go to Mexico and I did a lot of that stuff. I started to go on a lot of assignments just because I thought it would make my editors happy. And the reality was, like, I wasn't happy, and I was selling this idea of adventure in places that weren't adventurous. And oftentimes as a photographer, you have to do that, or you're asked to do that. Like, oh, let's go to this, you know, fancy place and make it seem really exciting. And I think that what happened was I started to get burnt out, and the images started to feel kind of meaningless to me. And so the moment that, you know, to come back to your question about Iceland, the moment that
we talked about the harsh environments, yes.
Yeah, the harsh environments. The moment that I started to kind of experience these harsher environments, they reminded me of where I grew up. They reminded me of home. They reminded me of, you know, surf trips as a kid, where you would be freezing cold when you got out of the water. And I found that, like, those moments, they kind of paved the way for more authentic experiences to happen. They paved the way for more real moments to be captured. And I felt like the images started to feel more valuable and more interesting and more unique. And that kind of translated through the photography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I believe these developments and this slight change of direction that you just mentioned were also influenced, for example, by a visit to Nicaragua that you did, wasn't it? It also changed your way of thinking about your photography in some sense.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I actually went there for Patagonia years ago. I was at one point I was on retainer for them, and I went there, and it was during a time in my life when I was definitely questioning what I was shooting and why I was shooting it, and what, you know, picking up a camera and making a living just taking pictures of people surfing kind of felt meaningless at a certain time. It felt a little bit like this was a waste of time and talent when people are out there suffering in the world and struggling. And I went to Nicaragua and I shot a surf trip. And then afterwards we visited La Chureca, which was this huge, massive trash dump where thousands and thousands of families lived. And it was known as like one of the seven disastrous wonders of the world, you know, sort of thing. And, kind of like the opposite of the wonders of the world, I guess you could say. And it really opened my eyes. It was hard to be there. It was hard to document. And I had aspirations to maybe change my career path and work on more assignments around social issues. And this was kind of like my foray into that. And I realized really immediately that, like, that just wasn't for me. I just, as much as I wish I could handle those atrocities, I just couldn't, you know, I photographed it and I just felt insignificant. Like the images weren't going to really help anybody. Like they weren't going to really make a difference. And that's a hard thing to digest. Mm. It's a hard thing to process, to realize like, well, you're there documenting this and yeah, maybe you can bring awareness to it, but I just didn't feel like I was going to be able to do what I maybe wanted to. And so it was another eye-opening experience, another learning experience of kind of realizing, well, is it enough for me to like go out and celebrate the beauty of the world and share that in hopes of promoting that as a message, right? And so I toiled with that a lot. But I mean, this is, I think, the path of a creative. You should like revisit why you do what you do. You should always keep it in question. Like if you don't and you just become complacent, then I think that your work in some way starts to lack meaning or becomes void of meaning, you know, and at least for me. And that's really where I felt like I could reimagine, reevaluate my work.
And you talk about specifically that as well in your TED talk about this reevaluation of your work, realizing that your original dream maybe wasn't your current dream anymore, wrestling with the question how you would move forward. And you call this in your TED talk your personal crusade against the mundane. That's basically what you came up with as a headline, maybe a little bit as a North Star for yourself. What does that mean, and how did all of this lead you from all these beautiful sunny places eventually to so many really cold places?
And again, I think it's a matter of putting it into the context of like the timeline of my career, right? Because everything has its place. And mm-hmm. obviously, I think it's a matter of coming to the conclusion of where you find the most joy. And I think the point of the TED talk, really, and that phrase was that, even the dream jobs can become kind of complacent and uninteresting, right? Like for me, I was a surf photographer. You know, this was my childhood dream. This was the people had visions of me like sitting on a beach, sipping Mai Tais with girls in bikinis. That's what they thought my career was like. When really, I struggled with finding joy in that, because at a certain point, I realized that although to some people, maybe that was enough, that was great, I felt like I was compromising my creative vision and what I set out to do with a camera when I was young. I wanted to experience the world, and I wanted the world to change me in some way and evolve who I was as a person. And I felt like those experiences and those warm tropical beaches with the high-rise hotels and the good Wi-Fi and the great dining and the food, they weren't doing that for me. And so it was only when I set my sights on places that, again, as I said, asked more of me. They required more of me, not only photographically, but creatively. They required more of me. That's where I found more purpose, because when I share those images, even now, even today, they feel more meaningful. They feel more special. They have a story attached to them because I had to work harder to get them. And, you know, it's true what they say about experiences that involve hardship. We store them in our brains more deeply, even with people, even with kind of our colleagues, our family, whoever. If you experience something that incurs a hardship, you're bonded to that person more closely, right? And I'm not talking about something that's traumatic. It doesn't have to be painful. It can just be something that was more challenging, right? And so I found that with my images and with my colleagues, the people I traveled with, my subjects, right? I found that I felt deeper and things felt more meaningful.
The way you talk about this reminds me a bit of a conversation I had with a lady named Christina Karliczek-Skoglund. She's probably the leading German animal documentary camera woman.
Wow.
And she realized that when, for example, in her case, when we think about sharks, and that was one of her focus topics, we tend to only normally, at least, think about, you know, the famous warm water sharks, the great white, and so on. But almost nobody talks about the cold water sharks, such as the amazing Greenland shark that lives in the North Atlantic Ocean and Arctic Ocean, I believe. So she made it her mission to try and film these sharks that are not only lesser known, but also, of course, much more challenging to find and to film. And that set her onto a completely new, exciting journey. And I think
super challenging.
Yeah, it's a pretty good argument for what you just said right now, for basically leaving your own well-trodden path at some point to find new purpose and creative challenges.
I'm going to have to listen to that podcast. I'm very intrigued by that. That's awesome.
But I'm very sorry. This one is in German only. I'm so sorry for that.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
What a disaster. But she's internationally known as well. I'm sure she also gave some international interviews.
Cool.
So would you say that these really challenging and cold landscapes that you have been focusing on for so many years, are they, first of all, a challenge for you that you want to face? Or are they something that you also thoroughly enjoy while being there?
No, I think it's a matter of realizing that, you know, you have to endure whatever you have to endure, some long, arduous drive, maybe some trek across some snowy landscape or harsh weather, wind or snow. But you always are rewarded with that beautiful day, that sunny, perfect day when the waves are big and everything, the light is so gorgeous, or, you know, you're weaving through chunks of ice on a beach. I mean, that's the point. I mean, I'm not a masochist. I'm not here just to suffer. I like to endure the trials knowing that on the other side of that is usually a reward. And I think that I would never consider myself even the most technically savvy photographer or the most creative photographer. I would just consider myself the one who's the most stubborn and willing to put in as much time as possible, put in the time that it takes to capture what I need to capture. And that's kind of the way I've always just framed it. Like I'm not in any way a creative savant. I'm just the one who's maybe willing to put in more time than somebody else.
And one location where you put in quite a bit of time is one that you also mentioned already, which is, of course, Iceland. You seem to be more or less obsessed with it. What is it that draws you back to this Nordic island again and again?
I mean, I think it's also the ease of access for me and wanting to kind of spend more time there personally as well as professionally, bring my family over there and let them grow up in a way that is different than how they grew up. I mean, that's a big part of it. Besides the fact that I feel incredibly inspired and have dedicated some of my biggest projects to that place, I think that ultimately it comes down to the idea of surrounding yourself with environments that do inspire you. They lift you up in some way. So it seems like a crazy, if I would have told myself when I was 20 years old that I would have an office there and I would be spending, you know, a third of the year there, I thought it would be wild. But nowadays it seems almost more commonplace, it seems like it's the right thing to do. So I'm really excited about what the future holds there. And I think that I've given a lot of my career there. I've been there over 50 times, and I would say 49 of those times have been for work purposes. I'm always trying to find reasons to go back or projects to take me back. So that's been really important to me.
I think that it probably is on a very, very accelerated level what happened to me after I wrote my first small book on the country of Laos, which I never intended to spend endless amounts of time in. But then, of course, other publishers approached me asking me if I could write a book about that country for them. So I went back and I kind of became the Laos guy for some of the people in this industry in Germany. Yeah. So I suppose that's also to some extent what happened to you with Iceland, right? Because you really
created
a strong portfolio for that place.
And it wasn't just me going there to photograph assignments. It was also me producing projects there and leading groups there and helping others, guide others to do projects. So it's the assignments have taken on many roles, and I've kind of just been accepting of whatever comes my way, any excuse to be back in the places you love.
And of course, the interesting thing is that quite often the places that you love and know, through knowing them, they, of course, don't get less interesting or more boring. They actually get more interesting because you understand more, you see more details, you form relationships and friendships. And I know that your relationship to Iceland also has changed quite a bit by now, from visitor to, I mean, you mentioned that you have an office there, but also I think you feel quite a sense of responsibility for that place by now.
I do. You know, there's a great quote from Yvon Chouinard, the owner of Patagonia. He once said, if you spend enough time in these wild places, you feel a sense of responsibility to want to protect them. And, you know, I don't really consider myself a huge environmental advocate, but I do my best. I try to involve myself in initiatives that I think will support places and benefit them. And Iceland's one of those locations that I've really been involved in trying to protect its river systems and form a national park in the interior and try to advocate for more protections of its wild spaces. So I love what you said. I mean, that's such a perfect analogy of if you, you know, the more you know a place, the more interesting it gets. It's really is true. It's funny to me because people always ask, like, how many countries have you been to? And I'm not the type of person that really likes to just go to new places all the time. I like to go back to places and form a deeper, more meaningful relationship.
See how they change, which you also only can do by going back.
Yeah. And I just feel like in some ways, like, reimagining your relationship with a place is really special. You know, it takes a lot for me to go somewhere that I've never been before nowadays.
I'm getting quite a good sense that for you, your trips, they are obviously not just about having random adventures and taking photos of them, but about making quite meaningful experiences, sharing them with others in some capacity.
Yeah.
And on your website, we can read that you work to, quote unquote, capture stories that inspire humans to consider their relationship with nature. In your own words, how do you generally try to do that?
I think it's a mixture of trying to document in some way kind of the human pursuit of joy, right? What does that mean? It can mean a lot of different things to many people. The projects I work on nowadays, whether it's a film or a book or something like that, oftentimes it's about people experiencing nature in some way, but also dealing with really challenging subjects like being a single parent or raising a kid on your own or,
I saw that movie. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. You know, we're working right now on a project that is about, a winter bike crossing of Iceland. I was a part of that. We crossed the country, but the story actually is about addiction and one of the subjects on the trip. And so I'm trying to use nature as kind of this canvas or this, like a location for where we can really dive deeper into some more interesting subjects, right? It's almost like a gateway for many of us to relate to, you know, yet there are more important topics in my mind to address, you know, topics about, again, like I said, those subjects that all of us are affected by. And I think in many ways, I've tried to evolve from just, you know, sharing and shooting, you know, more basic surf trips to things that I feel like are more meaningful. And that's really where I hope my career is going. I don't want to stray too far from what I love. You know, I love being outside and I love being in the elements, in the snow and in the waves and whatnot. But I want to use those as a gateway to tell deeper, more meaningful stories.
Yeah. Telling stories, I think, is an important phrase. You are often described, and I think that's absolutely justified, not only as a photographer, but as a storyteller first and foremost. And of course, visual storytelling is what you do, but in the end, it's storytelling and not just taking pretty shots.
Yeah, I think that the hope is that, you know, at a certain point in my career, I realized that photography was only going to get me so far to tell really deep stories. Like at a certain point, you have to kind of look into other platforms, right? Like this right now, like you've been a writer, you know, like you said, you've written books and you've dove into journalism and whatnot. But right now you're using podcast, which is more of an audible format, right? So you have the same initiative, yet you're doing it in a different way. And so for me, it's the same thing. Like if I just used photography as my one tool, I would have a very limited set of tools to use. So if I can work on a film or direct a film or produce a film or write a book or publicly speak or do a podcast, it gives me a whole set of ways in which I can then translate my experience. And that's really important to me.
And the stories, as you just described, that you are telling, they change through time, which is, of course, normal and healthy and good. But nature always plays a certain role in them. How would you describe your own relationship with nature? I mean, you obviously spend quite a lot of time in it. You photograph it, film it, you like it. But what do you get out of it yourself at this stage in your life?
It's a great question. I would say that for me growing up, it was a place I found a lot of solace. Mm. It was a place I found like real healing. I grew up, you know, like I said, in a single parent home. And for me, traveling wasn't really an option. So when we would go places, like the extent of my world, the furthest reaches of my young world was the national parks close to my home. And when I would go to those places, I was in so much awe and wonder. And it made me feel like the world is so much bigger than me. You know, the world is so much more grandiose than I ever could have thought. And I think that that awe and that wonder has never left me. And I feel like I'm still chasing that awe. I'm still chasing that wonder. And I've realized that my experiences outside and my experiences in these environments, they've only grown and gotten deeper and gotten more immersive and gotten more intimate. And it's given me a lot of purpose and perspective. And I know that that's not everybody's experience. I get that. That doesn't have to be everybody's experience. But for those that can relate, I just want to show them what's possible and what's out there. And in many ways, show them that, you know, if myself, coming from my situation as a kid, can dedicate oneself to a craft like this, that I think that it opens up the gateway for many others to realize what's possible. Nature has at times been a place that I could ask some really deep and meaningful questions. I actually wrote a children's book a couple of years ago. It's one of our best-selling projects ever. It won an award. It's all about a child in nature asking nature kind of deep and meaningful questions, like, where do I find happiness, right? And this is probably the best way to sum it up, because, you know, nature responds and says, happiness is all around you. Like, I created all this for you to enjoy. And it's a funny story. You know, it makes me almost emotional thinking about it, because it is so simple at times, but we can become so enthralled in like what's in front of us or our screens that we often lose sight of that.
That reminds me, well, first of all, it fits very well with what you said earlier on in terms of the films that you do today, where you use, without denigrating it, of course, but where you use nature not only as a protagonist, but also sometimes as a canvas to show emotions and elevate them and tell different stories. This just indicates or underlines what you just said, that we can also do that, of course, for ourselves and go into nature to try to explore this. And what you mentioned right now also reminds me, just right now, yesterday, I've seen a current Disney movie called Encanto, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Have you heard of it?
I haven't seen it yet, but it looks great.
It's really close to your message. It is about a Colombian village and the magic of this village. It's a magical place. It's being lost. And the outcome, the takeaway, is that the magic, of course, should not be chased or kept or hunted down, but should be recognized as being present in each and every one of us. And that is, I think, something that nature can show us if we're able to put down the noise a little bit that sometimes is so sidetracking for all of us.
I got to see that. That sounds amazing. I love Disney films.
Yes. Well, something that is also always, almost always mentioned when people talk to you or about you is that, of course, you have a pretty huge following on social media. And in an interview a while ago, however, you said that you hate talking about social media in many ways. Why is that?
No, I don't hate it at all, actually. It's one of my favorite, it's actually one of my favorite subjects to talk about.
I'm but also a little bit mean, because the second part of the quote is that you also love talking about it. So
I think what I despise is that oftentimes people want like a quick way to find success on those platforms. Mm. And usually that question's followed up by like, well, how do I do this? You know, it's challenging, because I don't know how to answer that. You know, I've taught in workshops around the world and at conferences, I've taught a lot about social media. And in the end, this is a glorified texting app. It's a communication platform. So if you're willing to communicate with others and you're willing to engage with others, then you will find success. Like, it's predicated upon you and your feedback with other people. And I think that's the hardest thing, is that if people are naturally introverted and they don't really like connecting with other people, then they might not find as much success. And I'm sorry, but there's no real way to get around that. Like, we need to see this for what it is, which is, this is a tool for connecting with other people globally and sharing ideas and interacting. And I find that for me, at least, that's probably the number one most important thing. The other really important thing is to consider that what you say in these platforms is just as critical as what you share visually, right? Like, what you put out there in the world to be the caption is kind of what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. if you have something important to say and you have something important to share, open your mouth and share it. But if you go out there in the world and you create some beautiful piece of artwork, and then you just simply, you know, this photograph that you trekked through the snow and you felt the wind on your back and everything was so amazing and you experienced it, it's burning a hole in your pocket, you can't wait to get it out there, and then you just tell the world that the mountains are calling and I must go, which is like a somebody else's quote. You know, you're stealing somebody else's words. It does you a huge disservice. So I just think it's a place where we can be authentic. And it's a place where we can share our experience and we can talk about what motivates us and moves us. And, you know, that can be at the risk sometimes of being more vulnerable. And I think that that's kind of a part of the whole process.
But it being more vulnerable, personal, honest, of course, also sometimes comes with challenges. And in your current book, again, it's called Wayward in English and Shots of Adventure in the German-speaking world. In that book, you write that perhaps the most serious criticism of your work is the accusation that certain regions are flooded with tourists because of your photos. Do you ever feel a conflict between sharing these quote-unquote unspoiled spots and, on the other hand, feeling responsible to keep places protected or even secret?
That's a great question. To be honest, I feel like it's a challenge and I don't really have the answer. You know, we want to hope and we want to inspire people to vote for places to protect them. Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, you have people complaining that places don't have enough protection, that they're overtrodden, that they're this and that. But then on the other hand, you have people complaining about, you know, not wanting to share them and keep them more secretive and private. Yet I find that they don't go hand in hand because in order for people to be motivated to care, it's only human nature to care about places you experience. I could talk till my nose bleeds about the importance of glaciers, but until somebody actually sees one, they probably won't care about it that much, right? And that's just, it's human nature. So I feel like I've always been somebody who doesn't want to be a gatekeeper. I want to invite people to go and experience places. And even if they go to the edge of the Grand Canyon with a selfie stick, that's okay. That's a gateway experience to a deeper experience. Ideally, I would rather see a person there than playing video games at their house. Right? I mean, what's the alternative here? Being in nature versus not being in nature. The thing that I find is funny is when somebody says, oh man, this place that was once so special is now overtrodden with tourists, but that place is like a roadside waterfall, something that's like 50 feet off of a main road. Like that was never special. I'm sorry, but that was the most easy accessible place. To me, the places that are special are the ones that take effort to get to, that take time to get to. And what I find is that there are always going to be natural limitations to those places, like a place that takes effort and time. And a lot of the places I've been, like the Aleutians or the Kurils, they will never be overrun with tourists. It's too challenging to get there. The weather's too harsh. It's too expensive. So I still want to share the beauty of these places. And I think that when it is something that requires some research and some effort to get to, I don't want to take away that experience. So I oftentimes try to be really careful about what I'm promoting and where I'm promoting because, you know, if it's something that's obvious and it's on the side of the road, of course, the more the merrier. If it's something that takes time and skill to find, I don't not share it because I want to inhibit people from going there. I don't want to ruin the experience of finding it. To me, that's the actual joy. The joy is in finding the location, figuring out the time of year, the light, the weather, all those things. Like, I don't want someone to give that to me because I know that I can, like everybody else, I don't have some special access to a map of the world. I just go on Google Earth and I figure out where I'm going to go and I research and I give time and effort. I don't have special tools. So I feel like I never want to strip that experience away from somebody. But yeah, to answer your question, I feel like, it's a very ignorant thought for people to think that the answer to protecting nature is to have less people in nature. We need to have more people in nature, to be honest, if we want to protect it, we want people to vote for it, and we want people to care about it. It's also our job, and when I say our, I mean people who maybe have been lucky enough to grow up in these environments, to educate those who are coming to say, hey, this is how you treat it. This is what it means to leave no trace. These are good principles to follow. But I'll definitely say that, you know, I am the byproduct of growing up in a home that couldn't access a lot of these places and learning slowly. And my experience in nature have totally shaped who I am. It's made me be somebody who cares about it, who votes for it, who advocates for it.
I just believe it's important to not see things too black and white either. So that's why I really like your elaboration on it, because I think we can agree there are, of course, places in the world that have been ruined by over-tourism and all these kind of things. But what you just mentioned, this reflects of some people to basically compare it with something devilish altogether and always to promote serene spots in nature, it's also too short-sighted in my view. And it reminded me a little bit when I read your book of an earlier phase in your life when you were confronted with something that strikes me as somewhat similar, which is when you were a surf photographer and people tried to chase you away from their beaches that you tried to explore. And it's, I think it's called localism. Basically, people feeling very locally strong about, this is my section of the beach. Nobody else is allowed to surf here, to be here, to photograph here. Which is kind of the same, a funny phenomenon in some sense, at least.
It is, and it's often really only one of the only places you'll find it is in surfing. And I think it's because there is such a limited supply at times of waves. And it's not like skateboarding, or you can't go there every day. And there are aspects of it that I understand. I understand the safety. You know, if somebody who's never been in the water before paddles out to a spot, they could injure themselves and somebody else. Right? That's dangerous. Also, too, there's an element of respect for how a lineup operates. Now, I think that there are people take it to extreme places and it becomes incredibly ignorant. It's a really dark side of the sport, because if you look at like snowboarding or something else like that, you're never going to have somebody, on a ski run, like come up and like, spray powder in your face and be like, beat it, get out of here. Like, that's not the, and so I think that if there was more of this, like, let me show you how this works. Let me educate you. People might feel a little less threatened, and people might actually be more respectful instead of it just always creating an altercation. And it's a challenging thing. I don't think it's black and white. I think that it's a gray area where there are aspects of it that make sense and there are aspects that don't. I sadly have been on the brunt of many of those arguments early in my career. And I kind of learned, I don't need that. I don't need to spend my time trying to fight my way through this. I would rather just go somewhere where there is nobody. Mm-hmm. There's nobody there. There's nobody that calls it home. Or there's a limited amount of people who would be grateful to have more people to surf with. So I feel like that's part of what drew me to those more remote places.
Something that for me was really interesting when I dove deeper into your career in preparation for this was that we talked about it. To me, as an outsider, it seems like you reinvented your career a couple of times. I'm sure for you, who actually lived through it, it's much more, at least looking back to it, like a red thread where one thing led to the other in a quite logical fashion. But something that is pretty clear is that you were always able to, and that's a pretty boring phrase, but to leave your comfort zone. And that applies both to the natural world. We talked about these harsh and cold places, but it also refers to your willingness and ability to really reinvent yourself in terms of what you do professionally. Also being willing and able to deal with some hardship, living in the car, whatever, surfing in polar regions and doing all these kinds of things. And of course, being scared and challenged, we all know that, and I know that from talking to so many adventurers, being uncomfortable, it can teach us quite a few things. And I believe one situation in which you have been pretty uncomfortable was a while ago in Russia, when you spent a day, I don't want to give it away. I'm sure you already can think or guess what I'm hinting at. Would you talk about, to finish this conversation up, about what happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, sadly, it's a longer story than we have time for. And it's why people should buy the book, is to learn about these things.
Maybe tease it if you want to.
Yeah, I'll just say that, I was so excited about going to some of these more off the beaten path places that even in my excitement, even in my joy of figuring out who I wanted to be, I rushed the process. And in rushing the process, I dealt with the consequences, and the consequences were I got thrown into a Russian jail cell for 24 hours. And it was because I had the wrong entry date on my visa, and there was nobody else to blame but me. I didn't check it. I didn't look. I applied for everybody else's at the same time. Theirs were correct. Mine wasn't. So it was obviously an error on somebody else's part, but I didn't look. And you know, I think when you're young, you want to blame people. And it was a really terrifying experience. It wasn't great. It wasn't ideal. It was, I had all my rights stripped from me, and I've never felt that before. Mm-hmm. And I think that in that process, I learned a lot about who I am, why I do what I do. And I think that the biggest kernel of truth was that if you want travel to change you and you want to become better through traveling, it doesn't happen magically in the middle of the process. It happens before you leave your front door. The process of respecting a place, learning to respect a place, learning to appreciate a place, it's one of those things that you gain slowly over time. And you gain an understanding for. And I think that for me, that was the hugest thing. It's like I all of a sudden was like, oh my gosh, like I broke the cardinal sin. You know, I kind of went here without slowing down and appreciating what I was doing and where I was going, because, you know, you feel invincible at a certain moment in your life. And so I learned a lot from that experience. It really taught me a ton. And I feel like, it's one of my most valuable lessons in life. But that's how those things happen. You know, born out of hardship is often times a well-earned lesson. So I felt really grateful and, super, super stoked on what eventually it led to and what it taught me. But, one of those things that in and of itself was probably a more defining moment in my career, just more personally than professionally.
And how do you try to balance this today? On the one hand, trying to be respectful of a place, slowing down, preparing a little bit for it, but also not over preparing and making sure that, especially if you want to have the sense of exploration, of finding places, finding lights, finding atmospheres, to also remain open and to a certain degree, at least, remain a blank canvas.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it. I think that there's a fine balance we strike between knowing as much as we can, because the more we know, the less we need, and then going there with an open heart and an open mind. And I think that for me, it is a matter of just trying to do my research and understand where I'm going, what my hopes are, what my aspirations are, knowing my equipment, knowing I feel like the more prepared I am for those elements and for those places, the more open I can be. There's nothing worse than being somewhere and you don't have the right equipment or the right gear, and you're like, well, I don't feel safe being out in the cold or being out in the elements. Cause that's where the magic happens, right? It's where the magic happens when you do sit through those storms, or you do kind of endure those moments. So I think for me, it's also a matter of, at the same time, while getting yourself physically prepared, be kind of becoming emotionally prepared to go to those places. Like, what is the culture like? How do you say thank you? How do you learn the five words that are important? How do you ask to use the bathroom? Things like that. Because that shows an amount of respect, you know, understanding the customs and the cultures. And although sometimes you'll have a guide or you'll have a fixer, I get that, but you still need to take it upon yourself to do your part. And I think that's the type of approach I take to every country I go to now.
And it is an approach that you took to this interview. And for me, that was really, really helpful and insightful. The whole conversation was. And I really want to thank you for taking the time for us today. Thank you so much, Chris.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really grateful. And Germany is one of my favorite places on earth. And I was so blown away when I went there on how tight-knit the surf community was there and just the culture. And I'm grateful to have this book in that country.
Have you been to Munich, to this little wave? Spa. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I loved it.
That comes to mind for me whenever somebody talks about surfing scene in Germany.
It's awesome.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.